This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 19th of August, 2022. This is a second take on the start of the program, trying to figure out what to say about this market. I think it's an interesting inflection point with some of the themes we've discussed this week in terms of what could pressure and push back against this considerable melt-up we've seen in financial conditions. And the premier one of those is the U.S. dollar itself, which we're seeing sort of, as we say, the wrecking ball beginning to swing again. U.S. longer yields as well, another factor. These are been teasing sort of the top of the range lately and just haven't quite, done the deed in terms of breaking higher, but are threatening once again. There's also, Peter, there's some talk about $2 trillion of options expiry. That's been a recurrent theme here and there. But I think really it's financial conditions that should be the focus, liquidity from the dollar, Fed balance sheet tightening, the U.S. dollar rising, U.S. yields potentially breaking higher. We had a couple of data points yesterday. Jobless claims came in lower than expected, and the previous one revised considerably lower to around 250K. So that sort of takes a lot of the stuffing out of one of those high frequency indicators that many may have been pointing to as a concern. The Philly Fed survey was far better than expected and was positive versus a massively negative Empire Fed survey. I'll stop banging on here on that front, but I think it's an interesting potential inflection point here. And I've got a couple of thoughts on the technicals, but what are your thoughts, Peter?
Well, I think you're right about the jobless claims, retail sales the other day, Philly Fed. I will say, though, on the initial jobless claims, the trend is still up, but it has really lost considerable momentum here, as you pointed out, with the revisions and lately figures we've got over the past 3-4 weeks or so. But the trend, I think, is still up. We had that bounce back yesterday in the S&P 500. We had a higher low for the session, so I think that was what really kickstarted the or was part of why this we had the strength we had on the rebound. But as I said in our internal call, two things, Bullard's comments that he's leaning towards a 75 basis point rate hike. I think he's very much just like Powell. They have mentioned it before, as you said, John. They're watching the financial conditions, and their own financial condition index they use at the Fed has eased considerably over the past 6 or 7 weeks. And as I've said, the cynical Peter, when I watch meme stocks Bonanza coming back to the market, you need to tighten more, because people are goofing around doing silly things, and they should be productive in society. So you need to tighten the screws on the system and get the excesses out. And I think that's why financial conditions now will begin to swing higher. Look at the US 10-year yield. I don't know where you think it was before we went into the studio, John, but right now it's trading almost 2.94. It's very close to its 50-day moving average, and I think we will go and test that 3%. And if we can push above the 3% in the 10-year yield, we will for sure go down to 4,200 in the S&P 500 and then lower again from that point. So, and that would, for each point we go lower, it increases the probability that what we just experienced was a very forceful bear market rally. And they happen. And they happen quite often in lengthy drawdowns. So this is what makes these trading environments extremely tricky, both for investors and traders.
Yeah, actually, good point there on the 10-year yield. Actually, the last time I glanced at it, probably not that many minutes before you're looking at it now, is there at more like 2.91%. So that it is a key breakout there with that kind of move. But yeah, 3% plus probably needed to apply even more pressure. Very briefly on the technicals, so the NASDAQ 100, which has traditionally been a bit more interest rate sensitive, we've seen three sets of pattern reversals recently, two of which were bad reversal signals, at least beyond the 1 day time horizon. So two shooting stars, and now we've had an evening star formation with a nice little Harami or hanging man at the top a couple of days ago. So let's see if this does the trick. You see the momentum indicator put there on slide 2, also showing signs of having flattened out and potentially rolling over here. So I would expect with higher yields, at least we just consolidate this bear market rally, even if we don't need to start calling a big, massive new challenge of lows just yet. And then, as you pointed out, Peter, the 10-year yield, I snapped at 2.92 on this slide 3 on the right there, and you can see the prominence of the 3% level there and the 3.5% cycle highs. And the Fed balance sheet, a new data point coming in this week, the latest week, a $29 billion draw. That's the kind of pace you need to get it on schedule for the supposed pace of $95 billion per month that they've declared as their target pace for a quantitative tightening. And I just drew four data points out into the future to give you an idea of what that kind of reduction looks like. And this is almost a mechanical withdrawal of liquidity from the market. So it will be a tightening of financial conditions we'll be seeing on this. And then just as a wild card, the dollar CNH, it did move to the top of the range, has almost threatening, it's threatening a breakout, but it hasn't broken out. But even more important than that would be, it's a factor unto itself, the strong dollar, of course, but if the CNH was to weaken, so the Chinese renminbi or yuan was to weaken at a pace beyond simply mirroring the general dollar strength, I think that would apply even more pressure globally to risk sentiment, because it would be a signal that China is pursuing an isolated weakening, not just a sort of surrendering against the strength of the dollar. I'll get to more FX in a moment, but Ola, I want to get back over to you. We've been talking about crude oil, whether it's bottoming out, tried to put in a pretty decent rally yesterday. And we also got the latest weekly gas supply data out of the US, and that does not look good. I'm looking at your bill data there on slide 5.
That's correct, John. We saw a weaker than expected injection, but again, these numbers are obviously backward looking, and we just come out of a very strong heat wave across the US, which raised the demand. But as you can see on some of the tables here, we did actually we had a 7% range yesterday and ended the day slightly down, with a bit soft again today. And the reason for that is basically we are seeing a pickup in gas production. You can see that the middle to the chart to the right there, the gas production, it's actually above 100 billion cubic feet now, so up around 5% on the year. So that's really what we need to see, that the producers are responding to these very high prices by adding supply. In addition, the cooling degree days, that's basically a reflection of how much electricity is needed towards keeping people cool in their homes. That is starting to come down as well. So all in all, perhaps we may, at least in the short term, have seen a bit of a peak here in gas prices with three so far failed attempts this year to reach that massive $10 level. Stock-wise, a bearish, no, a bullish report, but looking at some of the other drivers, would have potentially, at least for now, we may have seen a peak in the price.
And I'm really happy to see that wheat prices are falling, just for the sake of emerging market consumers and others to see those prices falling here. I guess it's the Ukraine supply situation that has improved.
Well, it's all about what's happening around the Black Sea. Ukraine exports is picking up. 500,000 tons has been shipped so far this month, well below what we're obviously seeing in a normal year. But nevertheless, from zero last month, it's obviously improving the outlook. And at the same time, we have a record production coming in Russia. That's all just taking, as you say, John, some of the sting out of this these supply worries that we that really were so focused, which was the focus back in May. So as you can see in the chart, wheat price in Chicago trading lower. I've hit the lowest since January. We're not quite there in Paris milling wheat, and that obviously is because of the quality difference. Chicago wheat is soft wheat. It's used for animal consumption. Milling wheat is human consumption, and that's the variety that we normally get out of Ukraine as well. So the demand or the prices for wheat towards producing bread still remains relatively higher than what we're seeing in the U.S.
All right. And then as I indicated on FX, so the dollar breaking higher, three key pairs, very key pairs for the dollar picture. Euro dollar breaking below that 101 range low, has traded significantly below that at times, is backed up a little bit this morning. Sterling versus the dollar, cable, well below 120. You can see that on slide 4. And then dollar yen ripping back above 135.50 and a lot more so now. And I imagine it's going to rise considerably further if we get this longer U.S. yield towards 3%. I still like the scenario where if yields properly pressure back higher towards the cycle highs, that the yen is only able to begin strengthening once the Bank of Japan is forced into a capitulation after some new, fresh, aggravated weakness. But keep an eye on yen. It's a pretty big mover here, and there's and the coincident indicator of the U.S. longer yields. And then on the FX board strength, and if you're seeing a new look and feel, it's because there is a new look and feel on the FX board. I use the coloring scheme with the blue. So I think it looks better. Thanks, Peter, for the inspiration there. The silver momentum is getting quite negative. The overall reading, not terribly negative. What's going on with silver, Ole? Why is silver sticking out this much?
Well, I'd say at this point it's mostly technical, because I haven't really seen any factors internally just impacting silver to this extent. But we're just seeing a continuation of what silver does best is it's outperforming in both directions. And after finding support recently, after that strong rally from the July low, we're now coming back down. And as you can see, I'm using Fibonacci's. That's the 1917, 1918 area really needs to hold now, because if we do break, then it could be basically, we could see a potential return to back to those July lows. But it's mostly technical. Obviously, it's focusing on the industrial metal space, which has suffered some setbacks this week, the stronger dollar. And at the same time, also silver, which has been drifting, gold, which has been drifting lower. And just adding all these three together, and silver tends to do even worse and also even better when it's the other way around.
All right. The slide there is on, or the chart there is on slide 7, by the way. Okay, Peter, over to you. Applied materials, we talked a little bit about that earlier this week. Out with some interesting report late yesterday.
Yeah, they delivered pretty strong results. I think they sort of supported or confirmed what we already knew, that memory chips were weak. We got those results already from Samsung and Micron Technologies. So that was not a big surprise. They said their logic business was doing quite well, and that's related to automation, CNC machines, etc., for general manufacturing. And as you also pointed out, they do a lot of the equipment that is used as well for semiconductor manufacturing. So whereas ASML makes these very advanced lithography machines that shoots ultraviolet light into the wafer, so the small electrons can pass through, and you can get your logic 0 or 1, and then you have your computer, whatever. Applied materials deliver other types of machinery, and their Q4 guidance, so they don't. Their fiscal year is not overlapping with the calendar year. Their Q4 guidance was way above market expectations, and they also hinted that global supply chain constraints are easing, but they are still tight in the semiconductors for the next couple of quarters. And then on slide 8, we also highlight today Canadian Solar. There's been a pretty remarkable rally in solar stocks since we hit the bottom back in June. And Canadian Solar, they have lifted their fiscal year outlook by $500 million dollars, so to $7.5 to $8 billion from previously $7 to $7.5 billion, compared to where they thought revenue was going to be just 3 months ago. So that's super positive. It indicates that there's a lot of demand for solar. And as I said, on the internal call, recently the CEOs of Orsted and investors were complaining over a lot of red tape and bureaucracy. It takes too long to get offshore wind farms being approved, both in the US and the US. And I think potentially this complexity around doing offshore wind power is potentially what's also driving demand for solar. So if you want to do renewable energy and it's too cumbersome to get approvals for offshore wind power and the complexity of those projects, it seems to be a little bit more easy to set up massive solar farms, thermal solar farms for sort of utility like output. So that would be my guess of driving these dynamics.
All right, and we are in on Friday, so not expecting much on the earnings front. We had some Chinese names out overnight, I suppose, and then Deere, or it used to be called John Deere. Is it just called Deere now?
It's just called Deere now, but it comes from John Deere. I guess the founder of the company. And
What's wrong with the name John? I'm struggling to understand that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, call the branding department of Deere. It's a phenomenal company. Actually, there was a great article, I think, in Wired magazine, if I recall correctly, not so long ago, where they talked about how Deere is transforming itself. So they still deliver their agriculture equipment, etc., a very trusted supplier to the entire agriculture sector. And as you can see as well, their share price has, of course, benefited a lot. It mimics, at least in terms of the swings, the variance, it mimics the Bloomberg Commodity Agriculture Spot Index, of course. But over time, I think actually Deere can deliver strong results, because it's not a commodity. They they produce products with a pretty interesting return on invested capital. But coming back to the Wire magazine, I was drifting a little bit away here, is that the company is turning itself into becoming a data powerhouse, because they all the different farming equipment that they sell now, they stuff them with all these sensors and chips that collect data. And when a farmer is buying these tractors, whatever they are buying from Deere, they also sign that they sort of give up the data, so the data is streamed back and Deere has the ownership of the data, and they use that and turn it into some intelligent analytics that is then fed back to the farmers in terms of services revenue, etc. So I think it's a perfect example of the old world meeting the new world and creating even more profits and profitabilities for companies like these. And I should say, I didn't have the time, but I have run the earnings, our earnings calendar code, and I've just looked at the output. So just to give you a little bit of some flavor of what to expect next week. So we have Palo Alto Network in cybersecurity reporting on Monday. We have Contemporary Amprex Technology, the world's largest battery maker, Chinese company, reporting on Tuesday. We have Medtronic and Intuit reporting as well on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we have the big ones. We have NVIDIA and Salesforce, both part of the top six of the information technology sector. And then we have Snowflake and Autodesk, smaller software companies, but also reporting on Wednesday. And then let me see, on Thursday, for those who like technology, we have VMware reporting. And then on Friday, for the Chinese interested, we have Meituan reporting. And I should say as well, Pinduoduo reports on Wednesday, but I will I'll type in the calendar and that one will be back on our Monday podcast.
Well, a lot of names given where the earnings season is. Okay, let's look at the calendar highlights. Absolutely nothing really today. We have a non-voter Fed speaker out today. The June retail sales from Canada, those are always very tardy releases there. But next week, fairly interesting, right up front, we have the Chinese rate announcement. It looks like the expectations are for another very modest cut to that one-year lending rate of another 10 basis points. Again, highlighting, as the Fed may be looking to do 75 basis points in September, that contrast there. And we're watching that dollar CNH rate like a hawk if it's going higher towards 7+ here, and breaking the range, most importantly, as a first step. The flash PMIs from the Eurozone and elsewhere on Tuesday next week for August, the August cycle. And most importantly, as a event risk, I think, across markets, as the Fed's Jackson Hole conference, it kicks off on Thursday with Powell out speaking on Friday, together with the release of the July PCE inflation here some, let's call it 2 weeks plus after the July CPI release, the BLS CPI release. So interesting, again, to see if we're seeing a transition point here, an inflection point back towards more caution if financial conditions continue to tighten. Let's see how things shake out. Have a great weekend out there, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.